Bank Holiday Monday and the reopening of outdoor hospitality and loads on your radio. This is Playback Daily. I'm Carol Moran and here's what you might have missed.
Oh, Brenda, it'd just be great to get away in the weekends because, like, if you're after having a hard week at school or and, you know, like, there's someone picking on you or anything, it'd just be grand. You have the full week to look forward to it. Then the weekend happens, you come home, you sit down for 10 minutes, then you get up and you're gone in the camper and that's you. You're grand.
It's incredible that you go from literally having not appeared on screen at all, turning up in normal people and then becoming one of the biggest stars, in your age group in the world.
I was actually still fighting my fertility battle. I was still lonely. I was still the person that was failing in rounds of IVF.
And we'll start here on Morning Ireland and a celebration for the win for Normal People's Paul Mescal at the BAFTAs.
It was the big hit of the first lockdown, and last night one of the stars of Normal People, Paul Mescal, was named Best Leading Actor at the British Academy Television Awards, or BAFTAs. In his acceptance speech, the Kildare actor said the adaptation of Sally Rooney's novel had changed his life. He also paid tribute to others involved in the production, including his co-star Daisy Edgar-Jones.
Paul Mescal.
Okay, I fully was not expecting to be here, so I have no clue what I'm going to say. I want to thank everyone at Hulu and the BBC. I want to thank everyone at Element. I want to thank Lenny and Hetty. Lenny, thank you for trusting me with this. Lara Beach, you're the best agent out there. I want to thank the cast. I want to dedicate this to Daisy, who is the best scene partner and one of the best people I know. I'm probably forgetting people and I'm incredibly nervous. So my mum and dad at home, I love you. So thank you. I don't know what else to say.
Paul Mescal speaking last night. Suzanne Keane is RTE's digital editor for entertainment. She was watching the awards. She joins us now on the line. Suzanne, we'll come back to Paul Mescal in a moment. Will you talk to us first of all about the overall awards? Because there were some people in attendance.
Oh, there was. And it was, it's great to see, you know, live award ceremonies kind of back on the telly now. Now, it was a small show, a small audience. Some people might have said the atmosphere was lacking, but I think it was just great to see people in attendance at an event. And it's kind of, you know, especially with cinema opening up today and everything, it was great to see kind of the movie industry getting, you know, back to some sort of normality there. And so we can celebrate, you know, these great TV programs and movies that are have been available for us to watch over the past year while we have been indoors.
Talk to us then about Paul Mescal. He was quite emotional there.
Oh, he was. And I have to say, I was absolutely thrilled for him to pick up the award last night. I mean, it's been a long time coming for him. Like, it was April last year when Normal People first aired. It's had 5 million streams on the player since then. He's been nominated for an Emmy Award, a Critics' Choice Award, a host of awards. And it felt like last night, finally, he was getting the award that he deserved. And it was kind of a representation for the show in general. You know, this was, yes, here's your award. This is what you've deserved.
The competition in his category as well. I mean, he said himself, he spoke himself at one stage last night about how keen that competition was. And it genuinely was.
It sure was. And I mean, he's only 25. And this was the biggest, you know, this was our first big introduction to him. And since he's made Normal People, like, he's gone on, he's making a movie with Olivia Colman, which has been directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal. He's sang with Dermot Kennedy. You know, there's lots of things in the pipeline for Paul Mescal. So while this is our first introduction to him and he's won such a big award at 25 years of age, I think there's plenty of things for him to come down the line.
Suzanne Keane on Morning Ireland with Rachel English. Then later, Marty Morrissey was speaking to a very, very proud dad, Paul Senior.
Now, Paul Mescal Senior, good morning to you.
Hi, Marty. Sorry, it's Paul Mescal.
Mescal, yes. It's a bit of a French... that's not the Mescal that I know from Cree in West Clare at all. Well, I can...
No, that's us, yeah.
I'm
the guy.
I can feel it already, Paul Mescal Senior. You're buzzing this morning.
Yes, it's been a fantastic experience for us here as well. We're absolutely delighted. And it's great to be talking to you here, Marty, yeah?
How, dare I ask, how did you celebrate the great news?
How did we celebrate? We had a BAFTA event, actually, in Kilcock.
That must be the very first in history.
it was probably the best one ever. Paul's auntie hosted us in Kilcock, and we had a fantastic BAFTA party, yes.
Were you delighted to get name-checked in the acceptance speech there? He was quite emotional.
He wasn't the only one, Marty. Yeah, we were all quite emotional. It was a great event. He was just great. We were really thrilled.
And certainly, it's some achievement. I mean, I presume you got a chance to speak to him. What did you say?
When he rang us, we heard it on the night, and that was the first we heard of it, and we couldn't really say much to him because he was gone again in a heartbeat. So we're hoping to get a proper chat with him at some stage today.
Well, when you see your son there getting a BAFTA, it must be remarkable to remember him as a child, growing up as a teenager, playing football with Maynooth, and there he is getting leading actor.
Yes, that was quite an achievement, all right, and it's a great good buzz for us here as well.
Paul Mescal, I want to say well done to all the family, and I can hear in your voice you're so proud and so excited and buzzing. So our love to all the Mescal family, and indeed to Paul as well. So well done, congrats.
Marty, thank you so much.
Paul Mescal Senior on the line to Marty Morrissey in the morning. Then in the afternoon, Gavin Jennings was talking to Normal People's executive producer Ed Guiney about the BAFTAs.
Well, actually, I was on they pre-recorded it yesterday afternoon from 2 to 5. And I was on representing Normal People for the best miniseries category, which sadly we didn't win. So I watched Paul very unexpectedly, actually, win the best actor. We really didn't expect it. I think that was also very obvious from his reaction when he went up to accept the award. So no, we were delighted, absolutely delighted.
7 nominations. You were expecting, presumably, to win at least one award, yes?
Well, I mean, I know it sounds like it's a cliche, but, you know, very often a nomination is a win, like to be recognised and in that company is a win, and it's a particularly tough year. There were some really standout shows. I May Destroy You, you know, being the kind of, you know, the one that sort of really captured people's imagination, and Small Axe, the Steve McQueen show. So there's amazing stuff out there. So, you know, I think we were very happy, but, you know, thrilled, obviously, that Paul won one of the main awards and delighted for him.
Have you talked to Paul since?
Yeah, I spoke to him briefly afterwards. He was about to head out, and his brother and sister were there, and a few friends and a few people, a few of the other actors from the show. But he, it was, you know, it's sort of one of the things that's weird about the whole Normal People journey is that we've never actually gathered to kind of properly celebrate its success. We've never been
at all.
Because we were supposed to, it was supposed to launch at the Tribeca Film Festival last April in New York, and that was cancelled. And, you know, everything that's happened since then, you know, it's been in obviously the weird world that we're all hopefully emerging from now. So we've never gathered. So I've promised that we'll have party to end all parties in Dublin as soon as we're let. We're all looking forward to celebrating, because it's a lot to celebrate. So, and Paul's win, the latest in a good story.
As you said, it's been such a bizarre journey for the programme, which in some ways seems like a very long time ago, the fact that you all haven't been able to gather since. But there was an element of normality about last night's ceremony, just seeing people all in the same room together and celebrating.
Yeah, I mean, there was, although obviously they had masks on and they were all distanced, so it still felt like a little empty, and there were lots of people zooming in from everywhere. But no, listen, it feels like we're getting back. And you know, compared to what other people have had to put up with, obviously not being able to gather to celebrate a television show isn't the biggest complaint of all. So I'm mindful of that too, and very grateful that the show has, you know, really resonated in the way that it has.
What sort of future do you see for Paul?
I mean, it's amazing, you know, like for Paul and for Daisy, I have to say. I mean, they are both now established on as proper stars in the kind of Hollywood system. You know, if you get a list of the top actors or actresses in their age group, I mean, the top 10, they'll be on that list, you know, for any new movie or TV show. So, you know, it's incredible that you go from literally having not appeared on screen at all, to, you know, turning up in Normal People and then becoming one of the biggest stars, in your age group in the world. And that goes for both of them, actually, which is amazing. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Ed Guiney on the News at One with Gavin Jennings. And on the Marty Morrissey Show, Marty was remembering the great Brendan Grace.
He's a big lass and a bonny lass, and she likes her beer. And they call her Cushy Butterfield, and I wish she were here.
The unmistakable voice there of Brendan Grace, the ballad singer, actor and comedian who went on to count Frank Sinatra as one of his biggest fans. When he had a number one hit with Cushy Butterfield in 1975, he was catapulted to fame. And for the next 40 years, he continued to make us laugh, becoming one of Ireland's best-loved entertainers. This is timely, because he met his wife Eileen on the June bank holiday weekend in 1972, and she was by his side to the end when he died aged 68, coming up to just about 2 years ago now. I'm delighted that Eileen joins us from her home in Florida. Good morning, Eileen. How are things in the Sunshine State?
Good morning, Marty, and it's great to speak to you from Florida. Everything here is wonderful. I'm delighted to be back reunited with my family after a very hard year. Looking forward to having a chat with you, Marty.
First of all, let me just ask you about the year you've had. How have you coped with COVID?
Oh, my God. It was a hard year, Marty, but I was at home in Killaloe, Ballina, with Amanda and Terry, and we worked well together. We gave ourselves a few projects to do to keep busy, but I found it very difficult from Christmas on to March. It was really hard, very, very sad times for everyone, I guess.
And this is a sad time as well of year for you, because it's coming up to Brendan's anniversary, isn't it?
It is. I can't believe it, Marty. 2 years now in July, and so much has happened, and we've lost so many loved ones and dear ones right down through the last year. It's just been a heartbreak. So I've been dying to talk to Brendan and, you know, explain to him what's going on. But I have great family, great friends, and they've helped me along the way. So, yeah, it's been a tough road, but I'm one day at a time, Marty. That's the way it is. Mm.
Do you feel he's very close to you?
Oh, yeah. Definitely, particularly in the year now in Killaloe when I was at home and I had a hip replacement in November, and I just thought, oh my God, what else can happen? So yes, I did. I found his presence huge in the house in Ireland. And now that I'm here in Florida, this actual weekend 2 years ago was the last time Brendan was at the house here, and we made it home to Ireland, and I'm so grateful that it worked out the way it did, you know? Mm.
And Eileen spoke about Brendan's last days.
Well, from the day that they took him into the Galway clinic, his team were just incredible. Like, you couldn't write this, Marty. It was Dr. Ali and his team, and Dr. Cronin and her team. They all just became family. And very early on, when we thought we were dealing with cancer, we had to go through all the biopsies and different things that they put their arms just around me to tell me and advise me, you know, get the children home. One of the nurses said to me one day, I know your family are all in America. Are they coming home soon? And I said, well, actually, they're all due back in July. And I knew by the look on her face that she was more or less saying to me, you know, sooner rather than later. And this was mid-June. Mm. And I was saying to her, like, are you telling me that this is going to be much quicker than I had anticipated? And she says, well, I'm not actually saying that, but she said, Brendan's going to have some very good days. And she said, wouldn't it be lovely if the family were here to experience all that and have some great memories? So I literally took every word she said to me, this beautiful nurse, I'll be forever grateful to her. And I called the family and had to tell them the devastating news, which was, you know, that phone call that you hate to make. Mm. But they all came home and we settled into the hospital, and every single day we were with them day and night, and there was music and there was food and the fun. But the reality was still very much there and we were all dreading it. But at the same time, we made the most of the time that we did have.
Amazing, really. And I love the story about what he did when his three young grandkids were leaving his hospital bed for the last time, all of them crying, and what he did to cheer them up.
Brendan was always like that. He never liked sadness. Even if I was watching a movie and he'd catch me crying, he'd say, "What in the name of God? Why would you put yourself through that? Put something funny on." So it was his personality always to make everybody laugh. But to see the three grandsons crying and upset, he wasn't going to let that happen.
So what did he do?
He told them, the words were, "Brad is here with me. Do you want to hear Brad tell him the words? I'll probably mess it up."
Put Brad on.
This is Brad.
Hello, Brad. How are you? Good morning.
I'm very well, thanks. How are you keeping?
Not too bad. So what did Dad say to the three boys?
It was one of the last nights we had with him, and the boys were getting ready to leave the hospital for the day. And we all kind of knew that we were at the end. And the boys were fairly upset, and they were crying and they were emotional. And of course, Dad, in his weakened state, even couldn't abide that. So he called them all over to the bed. And in a very dramatic way, kind of leaned into them as if he was to plant this final nugget of knowledge on them. And he says to them, "Always remember, boys, you can't burp and fart at the same time." And he sent them out of the room in stitches. So.
And so how have the family coped since losing Brendan?
Well, we have had very difficult days, as you can imagine. I'm still having very, very difficult days because the loss is huge and the loneliness. I miss him terribly for every aspect of my life. I miss us as a couple. I just miss everything about him and the kids. It depends on who's having the bad day. We have a WhatsApp group when we can't be together and we try to hold that person for the day. And, you know, you just have to get through it. There's nothing you can do. It's either sink or swim, and it's dark days. But the next day, if you feel a little lighter, you get up and you start moving.
Not easy, though, is it, Eileen?
No, it's not. It's not easy. Grief, like you said, if you love deep, you grieve deep.
Now, we all know what a funny man Brendan was, but what was he like to live with?
You know what? You're not going to believe this, Marty, but Brendan was very quiet. He was a very quiet person and just loved to be at home pottering around. He wasn't into golf. He really wasn't into sports of any kind. I'd have the match on every Sunday just for the atmosphere in the house, which we did love. But he was very quiet and he loved to be at home pottering around. When we were lived in Sagard, he used to love to be in the garden with the kids. And he was a great man for motorbikes. And at one point, we had a big double-decker bus in the garden. Like, it was amazing. Just tinkering around, you know. But he was very, very easygoing. And just simple pleasures.
You know, I know, Eileen, as you know, that he did listen to the Sunday game and on the radio, as he called it, over in Florida. And Brendan, your beloved husband, started writing to me from Florida and all places. You know his handwriting, big, long scribble, big, beautiful, big letters. "Hey, Marty, you just brought out beads of sweat on me on the first Katie Taylor fight. I thought you were going to have an orgasm. What a commentary." "Well held, Marty. Well, Marty, who needs TV? There I was, lying in the sun in Florida. I was hoarse. I saw the match on radio. Jesus, well held, Mr. Morrissey. Great stuff, Brendan Grace."
And you know what, Marty? He really did mean all that. And he did feel he loved you on the radio. Loved it.
Yeah, well, that's the ultimate compliment. But
and Marty asked Eileen about Brendan's comedy.
Brendan's comedy, it was very much holding up a mirror to Irish society. And, of course, the Irish wedding is a very unique occasion. And I just want to play this because I just love it.
"And I'd like to thank you all for coming along today, indeed, at such short notice. We'll all miss the bride and groom when they leave the neighbourhood, Kathleen and Cecil. And Kathleen, of course, she'll be particularly missed when she leaves, of course, because she was always a popular sort of a girl, really. And I suppose an obliging sort of a girl, really. And never, never let you down, really. I'm sorry. Sky was the limit, really, I was sorry. We'll all be sorry to see the back of her. But that's what, so to speak. But Mr. Watkin, I say, it's a great honour, of course, and honour is the reason we're here, really, when you think about it. Honour. Well, she offered her honour, and he honoured her offer.
Yes, Brendan Grace, best man. And I'm sure that even in Florida, that still brings a smile to your face, Eileen.
Oh, it certainly does. And you know what, Marty? I sat in the audience so many times, all down through the years, listening to the same things over and over again. And every single time it cracked me up to the point I used to be embarrassed because people would have known who I was sitting in the audience. And I used to think, they'll think, what is wrong with this woman? She's still laughing. But it did and still does to this day. Brings a great smile. Oh, like we all had that aunt or that uncle, the party piece. You know, we all did down through the years.
Yeah. And of course, there was Butler. One of his best-known characters when Brendan played the overgrown schoolboy.
I came home from school one day and I was very late getting home. And my dad said to me, why are you late coming home from school? It's nearly 6 o'clock in the evening. And I said, Dad, it's because I was kept back at school for 2 hours extra. And he said, why were you kept back for 2 hours? Dad, because the boy in the desk beside me was smoking. He said, well, if he was smoking, why did he keep you back? Because he said, I'm the one that set him on fire.
Oh, Butler, bring back loads of memories, you know. And Eileen, absolutely. As the wife, you always got an honourable or indeed perhaps dishonourable mention of all the clips. What's your favourite? What's the one that still, you know,
well,
gets
you? Well, the one I used to get a big slagging about was the Chihuahua. I apparently got a present of a Chihuahua and it kept banging into stuff and I used to keep cutting the hair of the dog, and then a neighbour said to me, you need to go to the chemist and get yourself Imac cream, and that'll do the job for you.
That'll solve the hair problem rather fast. Here it is.
Very fast.
She went in the following day on her bicycle. She cycled into the town, and she went into the pharmacy, and she says, good morning, Mr. Collins. I wonder, is it possible that I could have a tube of Imac? She didn't want to broadcast it because there was people in the chemist. He said, certainly, man, no problem. And he gave her the tube of Imac. And she was walking out of the shop. And suddenly, he shouts after her, by the way, Mrs. Grace, in all the years you're coming into me here, I've noticed you never bought that particular product in the past. Just remember, the first time you use it, don't wash your legs for about 48 hours. And my wife, through her embarrassment, forgot herself. And she says, she says, I won't be rubbing it on me legs. She says, I'll be rubbing it on me chihuahua. And then to make matters worse, he shouts after. He says, well, in that case, he says, you better not ride the bicycle for a couple of weeks.
The late Brendan Grace from the Marty Morrissey Show. And in the afternoon, Brenda Donoghue was looking into the domestic arrangements of families all around the country in Like Family.
Back her up and around if you just keep going. Back. For 2 more feet. Okay.
Good stuff.
You're grand, you're perfect there.
The Grimes and their family from County Louth love their camper vans and they're back on the road again.
I'll keep your eyes on the road, you hand upon the wheel.
Oh, it's great to be back out in the campers and the kids and all with me and the grandkids and the freedom.
My mind just rests when I get into the camper. Put out the tables and chairs, and my son-in-law does all the cooking, of course. And I love it to be served.
And speaking of the son-in-law, here's Paddy.
It's just when you're working long hours, Brenda, and you're flat out all week, it's great to get into your camper van. You kind of relax, your mind's rested. But the whole lockdown, I think everybody's mental health has really suffered. You know, to be told that you can go back out on the road, it's just like somebody lifts the weight off your shoulders.
And then I got the golden invite from Patricia.
Brenda, come on in and see the life we have. Come on into the van. This is the dining room part of the camper.
Yeah.
And we turn around the driver's seats and they act as armchairs.
And then you have your toilet and shower. There is a lot of room in there. Some of us go in forward and some of us have to back in. Beep, beep, into the toilet, Brenda.
Tell me, Patricia, how did you start with the camper vans? Who got the first one?
We started off, we bought an old Mercedes van. There was rust and everything on it. It was in an awful state. So we took it home and it was sprayed and we started doing the back of it. So I got a roll of carpet and I started on the floor and I walked right up the walls, round the ceiling and back down. And my partner does a lot of welding, so he welded a bed together. So we pulled that out at night for a table and we slept on it then at night.
And now all your children do it.
Well, they'd like to follow Mammy.
Yeah.
And now the three of us drive off in convoy.
I can really see the joy you have getting back into the camper van after lockdown. How has COVID been? What was the hard bit, Sharon?
COVID was very hard all around. As many families have, we've lost a very special family member and it has blown us all out of the water with the COVID as well. It was an aunt and her name was Marcella Flood and she was known as Mrs. F. And she was the best woman I ever knew. She got the COVID and got rid of it and then she got it again. And it got into her lungs and she was in hospital and her daughters and sons watching her as she was practically dying was the toughest thing I ever looked at in my life.
Of course, COVID has been extremely difficult, but I am very impressed with both of you because you've been very creative as well during COVID.
Well, when lockdown came into play, we had really nothing to do and I took on to upcycling furniture in my own house. You know, I started off as a hobby and it's kind of nearly coming into a job at this stage. I funk them up and send them. I do an awful lot of work for my friends.
Yeah.
Because again, COVID has come in and if you can do anything to put a smile on anyone's face, you will.
Part of you, your helmet. Dylan, put your vest on you there now. You have to be safe now on the road.
Paddy and his sons, Dylan and Paddy, are heading off on a cycle.
Oh, Brenda, it'd just be great to get away in the weekends because, like, if you're after having a hard week at school or anything, you know, like, there's someone picking on you or anything, it'd just be grand. You have the full week to look forward to it. Then the weekend happens, you come home, you sit down for 10 minutes, then you get up and you're gone in the camper and that's you. You're grand.
Dylan, what age are you?
I'm 10.
What are your jobs when you head off on the camper van? What do you have to do?
So I have to, like, put all the pillows and the switches and DSs and all that in, and sometimes I have to help load the fridge. It's really great to be back because you get to see everybody that you missed during COVID. It would do wonders for you and all the hard times in lockdown.
How much do you now value family time with them?
I value it very much than I did in 2019. Now getting family time is pretty rare and it's nice when it does come along.
Tumbling curls of green by a stainless stream in light. Do you know what, Brenda? This is my favourite time in the evening when we're camping. This is when the pan's on, we're all sitting around the table and we have the little fire lit there at the side to keep us warm, keep the midges away. We have candles lit and all and it's absolutely lovely and we're all starving. Everybody's going for the sausage sandwiches. Can you hear them sizzling?
I can.
Brenda Donoghue from Like Family. And on Morning Ireland, the reopening and those crowds in Dublin at the weekend.
Thousands of restaurants, cafes and pubs will reopen for outdoor service today. In many cases, it will be the first time they've opened this year. tens of thousands of people will be able to go back to work. However, in Dublin, a shadow has been cast over the reopening by a weekend of trouble in the city centre. On Saturday night, Gardaí used shields and batons and blocked off several streets. The Assistant Garda Commissioner, Anne-Marie Cagney, blamed the violence on small groups of young people who travelled into the city centre looking for trouble. Frank Thornton is the President of the Garda Representative Association and he joins us now on the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Rachel. How are you?
I'm not so bad at all, thank you. What did you make of what happened in Dublin at the weekend?
Yeah, firstly, I'd like to commend all the members that were on duty over the weekend, you know, for the professionalism and the manner in which they carried out their duties. And at times, like, you know, it was extremely difficult situations. Like policing this pandemic since March 2020, and now as we move into the phase of reopening society, it has been and it continues to be difficult and challenging. Like throughout the weekend, again, we witnessed the vast majority of members of the public, you know, they were compliant with the current guidelines and restrictions. And, you know, we did not see large-scale resistance. And yes, there were a number of arrests, but this is quite a small number considering there were, we were dealing with large gatherings and hundreds of, and sometimes thousands of people in the city centre. You know, like in these circumstances, like, I believe our members have acted with great restraint and professionalism, administering the 4 E's again and utilising our discretion with enforcement as the last resort, which is in the best interest of all those.
Were you surprised, though, by the approach on Saturday night, in particular when Gardaí used shields and batons and moved people on from public areas?
No, like, you know, we have to deal with what's in front of us in a live environment. And some of the commentary and the pictures that we've seen, you know, these have followed an engaged and encouraged approach whereby, you know, unarmed community gardaí are mixing with crowds, engaging with the groupings, and if necessary, asking them to disperse or distance themselves. And 99% of the time, compliance was received there. Like, the deployment of public guard units, you know, that's a decision of senior garda management. Like, that's to ensure the safety of all members and the general public. And again, like, you know, it appears there was only a small number of occasions when hostility was missed. Everybody should be afforded the opportunity to enjoy returning to normal society and engagement. And if incidents like these, you know, we've seen that have occurred, then yes, if the response from our members is increased, and rightly so, to ensure the safety of all.
Do you have any concerns, though, that after 15 months in which, by and large, the Gardaí and the wider community got on pretty well, there was a lot of policing by consent, that scenes like those on Saturday night, that they might create divisions?
In general, I wouldn't say so, because the vast majority of the public, you know, we still engage very proactively with, and they engage very proactively with us. And this is just a minority grouping that seem hell-bent and just creating havoc at the minute. And that's why the response is upgraded in as well.
There doesn't seem to have been anything similar in other towns and cities. I mean, listening even there to what it says in the papers, they were talking about a small number of arrests in Cork, but they were mainly for public intoxication rather than for violence or anything like that. Why do you think that other areas managed to avoid this sort of trouble?
Well, I would imagine that, you know, primarily Dublin is densely populated, and of course that carries, you know, a greater risk of this kind of disorder coming on stream. Like, but again, you know, it's important that the resources are made available to frontline Gardaí and that that is adequate and that the public guard units are deployed 24/7.
As you say, there were a relatively small number of people over the weekend determined to cause trouble. Could this have been handled in a better way? I mean, could more planning have gone into what was happening over the weekend?
Well, we have to trust in seeing the Garda leadership teams and how they plan and deploy the resources. So we have to, as I say, trust in that. But right now, as I said previously, you know, our response is by and large with consent to the public, and then of course it's upgraded when we meet hostility in some areas.
Frank Thornton. Then later, Rachel also was welcoming the reopening of outdoor hospitality.
Pubs, cafes and restaurants will be able to serve people outdoors. Cinemas, gyms, swimming pools and leisure centres are also back in business. Our South East correspondent Conor Kane joins us now from the Food and Wine Emporium on the Dunmore Road in Waterford City. Good morning to you, Conor. What's happening there?
Good morning, Rachel. And yes, I'm here at the Food and Wine Emporium on a rooftop terrace just off the Dunmore Road in Waterford City, overlooking the outskirts of Waterford at the moment. And it's a bright, sunny morning. There's a few people already out and about, even though it's a bank holiday. And it looks set to be a glorious June bank holiday today, as a lot of people prepare to welcome customers back to outdoor hospitality. And there's a lot of relief about and a lot of anticipation and maybe some nerves as well. And a short time ago, I spoke to some people who are about out and about early and here at the Food and Wine Emporium in Waterford for some early breakfast.
Oh, I'm absolutely delighted that it's back open. I think there will be hopefully a sense of normality now for us all. I suppose everyone's had, you know, a limited opportunity to meet friends and family over the last year and a half. And I think, you know, the hospitality industry open is central to us all having a level of normality, you know, where we can get back out there again.
Would you have any nerves about it at all, about people gathering again?
No, not in a controlled setting and controlled environment. I'd have no issues or worries about it at all. I mean, if you're keeping your social distance and, you know, you have your masks and sanitising and you're outdoors, it's very safe, I feel.
It's a relief. It's great. It's been a long year and a half and I'm really looking forward to getting out and supporting local businesses and actually having somewhere to go with it in your own back garden for being there a long time. So it's nice, but it's you get tired of the same place all the time. So really looking forward to getting out. Would you have any trepidation about returning to places where there might be some sort of crowds, even socially distanced? None whatsoever. Like, I mean, everybody's tuned in now. It's a lot different when it first started. Everybody's wearing good hygiene or wearing masks, good hygiene.
It's wonderful. I was saying to Richard this morning to get dressed up and to go out again is rather different and quite wonderful. We've both been vaccinated twice, so that adds a certain safety wall. And so it's wonderful to be starting back into normal life again.
Oh, it's just brilliant. It's that sense of freedom again and sense of normality. It's just wonderful. It just makes you feel like the world is normal again. And it's been a long, long haul. So we're thrilled.
And for all in the hospitality business, it's been a difficult few months. And a difficult year and 3 months overall since the pandemic started in these parts in March of last year. And I'm joined now by the owner of the Food and Wine Emporium, Tony McMahon. Tony, how are the nerves today?
Hey, Conor, they're a little shaky, that's for sure, because it's been so long now since we've been doing what we like to do. So, but excited at the same time.
And you last were open in December. What's it been like since then?
It's been December 24th, who would have thought? Here we are on June 7th, so it's been a long time. It's been all about trying to change and adapt and move and just hope. And so we've been busy behind the scenes.
And can you describe that? It's March of last year since the turmoil started in this industry. What has that been like? And go through the various stages you've gone through.
So I think it's fair to say it's been stop, start, hope and promise and disappointment. So when you, I think that's, in summary, it's been like we've been plagued by uncertainty, and that's been the trouble for all of us. So just trying to point forward, make plans has been so difficult. But I'm trying to stay in touch with our staff, it's been challenging, and indeed our customers, and that's what's really important for us. So here we are today, and I think we've managed to do most of that.
What are you looking forward to over the coming weeks and months?
I think you've heard it there in the Vox Pop from some of our customers who have already gathered here this morning. We're just hoping for, you know, some normality and whatever that means to us and getting back to doing business and hopefully connecting with our customers.
Have you any nerves or trepidation at all about maybe having to close yet again over the coming weeks or months?
Yeah, absolutely, because as I said already, it's been uncertain times, and that, from business perspective, hasn't completely faded. We're hearing more about different variants and risks and so forth. So that's it. We just don't know what to expect in the next number of weeks and months. All we can do is play our part and make people feel safe and they want to see safe, and so that's our priority.
Conor Kane's report there. Then later, Rachel spoke to Steve Barry of Dennehy's Gyms in Cork for their reopening.
Steve, I gather that your doors are already open. Do you have many customers on a bank holiday Monday morning?
Morning, Rachel. Yeah, well, we've been open since 8 a.m. and you'll be, there was people waiting at the door to come in. So I suppose when you go without for so long, people are just buzzing to get back. So
God,
yeah,
that's very impressive, isn't it?
Yeah,
on a bank holiday Monday morning.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? Even in a bank holiday 80 months ago, it would have been quite busy. But today, I think especially, people are just yearning to get back into it. So I'm looking out at the gym floor now when there's a good buzz around and people are just happy to be back into a bit of routine, you know?
We spoke to you when you were having to close your doors last December. How have things been since then?
I suppose it's the same for a lot of people around the country. I suppose it's just the unknown. We're just kind of waiting to see. Obviously, the country was in a much different place last January and February, so we understood the reason why we had to close. We would have liked to have been open a small bit earlier, but look, that's all in the past now, and we were just kind of planning. We actually opened our fourth facility this morning as well, so when we closed, we had three, and we had a fourth kind of ready to open, so we've been working on that. So we're kind of, it's a big day for us as a company, opening up our fourth gym in Cork, so we've just been working on that and looking what we can do to create an environment that's safe and comfortable for our members, and as well as that, an enjoyable environment, because that's a big thing. You know, people are coming back in after so long. We want them to enjoy the experience of coming back into the gym.
Because gyms are indoors, have you had to introduce extra safety measures?
Yeah, well, you know, we did a lot of work in our facilities this time last year when we were opening for the first time. So we physically moved everything around to allow for social distancing. We have good ventilation systems in our gyms anyway, so it was lucky that we had them. We have air extraction systems, and all our gyms have a lot of windows that we're able to open and leave air flow through the gyms quite freely. And then you have your sanitization, your masks in the common areas. And people are clued in at this stage. They're willing, you know, people know the score, so everyone's bought into it. So, like, I felt when we were open last summer and in December, the gym was very safe, and everyone that came in was very comfortable and happy with how things went, you know.
Steve Barry there. Then Breed Luby of Odeon Cinemas was telling Rachel about their reopening.
And what a great day it is today, absolutely. We reopened all of our cinemas across the country, and we're so looking forward to welcoming back in our local communities and guests. So it's quite a phenomenal day for us, without a doubt.
Now, what sort of measures have you had to introduce? How have things changed?
Well, as you can imagine, we've become quite accustomed to reopening our doors in the last while, as I'm sure quite a few other businesses have as well. Of course, we've put plenty of extra measures in place to make sure we can provide a safe cinema experience for our guests. So, you know, we're limiting a number of seats on sale for each film. We're guaranteeing unoccupied seats between parties to meet social distancing requirements. And we're staggering those shows so we can reduce queues and have social distancing in place throughout the building. Our teams have spent plenty of time training on the safety and hygiene measures. And we've more frequent and more thorough cleaning routines throughout the whole cinema. And of course, for a contactless experience, you can book on our website as well. So quite a lot of the measures that I think people are used to seeing, but ones that are nonetheless, our safety of the guests is very important, so we're here to make sure they can enjoy it.
Yeah, Steve was saying there, I think we've all got used to the rules and the regulations now. So just a final question to you, what's on?
Oh, well, we've got some incredible content on, so it's a great question. So there's a bit of movie magic for everyone with some newer releases. So whether you're looking for a family-friendly flick like Peter Rabbit 2 or Tom and Jerry the movie, or you want a jump-in-your-seat scare like The Conjuring or A Quiet Place 2, we've got something for everybody.
Reed Luby on Morning Ireland with Rachel English. And on the Marty Morrissey Show, Johnny McMahon and Johnny O'Brien, a.k.a. the two Johnnies, on moving to Spotify.
What does it actually mean to be exclusive to Spotify? I guess they pay you rather than you paying them.
Well, that's always a good start. Yeah. So before we would have said anywhere you listen to your podcasts, you can get the two Johnnies podcast. From now on, we're only on Spotify. Why would we do that? Why would we exclude listeners? Because we want to get bigger and we want to get better. Spotify are the biggest podcast platform in the world. When people log on to Spotify, we want Spotify, bang, two Johnnies in your face. They're in our corner now. They're going to promote us in new territories around the world, over in the UK and Australia and in America. They're going to put us in touch with people who are experts, because how would two lads from Tipperary get this kind of exposure anyway, or otherwise around the world? So now we're teaming up with the big guns.
Do you know what? It's amazing news for us, the Spotify deal. And I think, like, look, as you said, like, they pay us a few bob, and that's always handy. I mean, but this is like Premier League, Marty. This is like we're after going into the top four now.
Right.
So we have to evolve. And I mean, we've got a team of people who work for us as well. So it's going to benefit them. We'll be able to get possibly a new studio for our podcast and stuff. So it's expansion, as they say, in business terms.
Right.
The Spotify podcast app is free. Right. And our podcast, just search The Two Johnnies Podcast, is free. There is a premium service on the music side of Spotify, but no, it should be available all around the world. And it's great for us. We're still doing it from our little home studio in Care, County Tipperary. It's still the two of us.
It's so important for us from being from the country, and I think we're really proud of that, and that's something that we want to stamp all over any projects that we do, be it telly or be it podcast or anything we're involved in. It's important we're from the country and we stay down there and we're with our people, as they say. I think we represent, you know, the cultures. Like, some people get offended by the word culture. Not us. We're proud. We own it. We're happy to be from the country, and I think we represent the other people. You know, that's...
You see, what's going to happen now is that people in Australia and in Japan and in South Korea, they will want to have a Tipperary accent.
Yes, yes.
Like, do you realise the impact you're going to have on world peace?
There'll be lads out in Japan just saying lad and well and real flat Tipperary accents like us on them. Yeah, it's going to, Tipperary going to take over the world, Marty. I think that's the way it's going to be.
Tipperary people pronounce it with no E.
Oh, really?
Tipperary.
Tipperary. Yeah. I must do that the next time. Tipperary.
What's the big sign of a Clare accent, Marty?
We are particularly joyful when we beat Tipperary in a Munster final.
Tipperary. Very few and far between, Marty, but we have suffered that in the past.
What seldom is wonderful, Marty, isn't that it?
Oh, hold on. Let me get. I'm getting a memory of 97. Being Tip in the Munster final. Being Tip in the All Ireland final. No. I don't want to overemphasize it.
Sorry.
He's having a convulsion here, Marty.
I'm taking a fish.
He's having reversals.
Is there any risk in this for you guys at all in terms of Spotify? Was this difficult to achieve, by the way?
I think we're only the second maybe podcast in Ireland that's ever been signed to Spotify. And worldwide, this is something that it looks like they're rolling out. They're almost going to countries, picking whatever's the biggest and fastest growing and trying to lock it in. And I think, yeah, it is hard to achieve. There is a risk. I mean, when we look at our figures, we always go into the back end and look at figures and stats and see how we can improve. 60% of our listeners already listen on Spotify. So we're still going to keep those 60. It's a matter of bringing the other 40. And the gas thing is, we've brought our fans from, you know, doing videos on Facebook to YouTube. We've brought them to our books. We've brought them to our TV show. We brought them to podcasts. Because when we started podcasts, to be honest, Marty, we didn't really know what a podcast was.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who listened to us didn't know what it was. So we had to go and explain it, brought them on that journey with us. And the response we've got from the people who follow us is really positive. So I think they're going to come with us on it, hopefully. And we'll, of course, attract new people.
How did this love affair begin? I mean, how did the relationship develop? I mean, and to do it on podcasts, to do it in public, this love affair.
Yeah. That
between... Us or between us and our fans?
Just between the two of you.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Like, I lived in Roscrea, which is in North Tipperary. I moved down to Care. I got a job in Clonmel. So I moved to Care and I was looking for somewhere to live. And I mean, as usual, the first place when you're looking for anything, you go to the local GA club. Mm. So I transferred clubs and the first night training, I met Johnny. And I was
Wait one second now. Where are you from originally?
Roscrea.
And who did you transfer to?
Care. Yeah.
God, that was a big signing.
So I came in, Marty. I told them I was going to be the next Owen Kelly.
Yeah.
You know, I was more like Luke Kelly, but you know what
but
I mean?
Could you not stay with your own crowd?
I could have, but it was an hour away and I wanted... Do you know what
I'm
it
sure
is?
I'm sure God love you.
Yeah. Marty.
An hour away.
No loyalty.
North and South in Tipperary now. You know, there'd be big rivalry. And plus, I was going out with a girl and still am in Care. And she had six brothers playing with Care. So I wasn't given an option, Marty, when it came to transferring. It was transferring or no dinners.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So and I went down the first night and met Johnny, and he had a spare room in his house. He was looking for a lodger, and I became that lodger, and so it began.
And it was a chance opportunity at a panto that got the two started.
When a chance came up at our local pantomime to do something, I said, we don't want any parts, we want to write our own script. And while they pulled the curtains and were changing the sets, the two of us came out and we had a few jokes slagging local people. Oh, Marty, I can't believe you bought a ticket. You know, really easy stuff to get us going. And that night, people were saying to us, I don't know what it is, but ye have something. Mm. And we didn't know either. So we didn't do that for 2 more years.
Until we figured out what we had.
And then we started making videos on Facebook. And our first ever video... Well, Tipperary were playing Kerry in the football,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I think our first ever video that got picked up was Kerry played Golden in an under-21 B county
big
final.
Big game now.
Big game.
Sunday game standard now immediately.
And we went all out. We said we won't do it by halves. We hired a cameraman, the whole lot. We went down, we filmed the match, we commentated on it, and we put that up on Facebook. That was our first ever video. Right. And then that gathered a bit of momentum. Then we done like a Tipperary sketch.
Sorry, can I say, we did... leverage your name on that first video.
Excuse me?
When we posted it, we did say, watch out, Marty Morrissey.
That was the first video we ever...
That's why I got loads of texts. I couldn't understand it.
There you go, Marty. And that was the first video we ever put up 5 years ago, almost to the day.
Yeah. We were in the crowd with two microphones and some old lad came over and stood right up against me eating an ice cream. Didn't know what we were doing. And I swear, during the second half, you can hear... So it took thick skin to go into a crowd of our own people and start commentating.
Yeah.
And a goal would go in and I'd shout and they'd all look at me and then I'd get real quiet and self-conscious again on the microphone.
Yeah. Takes a while.
How do you do it?
Yeah, I know. Nobody listens to me, for God's sake.
Stop.
But from there... Mm-hmm. What was the next step, just out of curiosity?
I suppose, like, the videos kept going, we kept getting views on Facebook, and we got offered a show. Mm. Now, we had no show written, we had no nothing, and they rang us and said, there's a slot in the Clonmel Junction Festival, and there's a bit of cash going if you want to put on a show, and we wrote a show in 4 weeks. And then that went well, it sold out 350 tickets for our first ever show. And then we took it on the road, and we'd done a lot of GAA clubs, and we'd done around 50 shows. With that first show that we'd written in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And then, again, we came to a juncture then after that where it was like, God, we're making a few pounds. And I said to Johnny, I came home one day and said, I'm after handing me notes.
Yeah.
And he said, that's way too early. I don't know what we're going to do. We're not even, like, we don't have enough money for wages.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I don't have a job now, so we're going to have to get wages.
Yeah.
So from that moment then, Johnny went on a 3-day week and we drove it on. And then we got management. I think that was a key juncture, in fairness, because we'd taken it so far on our own, but we weren't being considered to be a serious act.
Until we got management.
Marty, Johnny Smacks used to put on a fake accent and pretend to be our manager on the phone.
Really?
When I was negotiating money, I'd put on a fake accent and stuff like that.
Go on. I want to book you now. I want to book you.
So this lad rang me and he says to me, I'm looking to... great stuff. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, how many people would you be thinking about selling tickets to? And then he said, when we were fighting over money, I broke back into my own character. So I nearly went back in and I was like, no, there's no way they'll do it for that. He said, you sound very like him. I said, we all sound the same up here.
We're all from the one town,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, in fairness, we pulled it off because, like, I'd say to him on the phone, one of the guys will collect the money from you. Mm. And then away we'd go. Like,
and
we'd like
get me and me again. Yeah.
One of us. Well,
I can't make it on the night.
Yeah.
One of the team.
Yeah, I said, I don't go to shows. So we bluffed our way and we were going well at that. But again, we had to kick on to the next level.
So really, while it started by accident and started because of your own friendship, you've also moved it on a notch as it went on. Tell me about the podcast.
Yeah.
Because I just want to say, I was disappointed when I saw the press release about Spotify. Like, I thought I'd be mentioned.
Yeah.
But instead of that, you went with Roz Person. Like, hello.
She is from Tip, Marty.
Don't I know you're such a clannish crowd in Tip?
Marty, it actually cost too much money to put your name in it. And after leveraging your name for our first ever video, we didn't want to completely owe you everything. Yeah.
The podcast has been amazing for us. What started as just telling stories and having the crack, and then when you realise you've got such a huge listenership, and where we feel that we are kind of that water cooler conversation for young people who, you know, like, mediums are changing. Maybe television isn't the magic moment that it was, where the whole country would stop and take a breath anymore. A lot of people are watching on playback and listening to podcasts. So we've kind of ended up being that uncle for a lot of young people. So it's important to us to try and be that crossroads, that conversation for young people. And on podcasts, you have a little bit more freedom to push the boat out. A lot of issues that are cropping up in Ireland, and, you know, for us as young men trying to find our way in the world, the goalposts are rapidly changing for people in the way culture is. So as a comedian, you have the right, if you want to go on and make fart jokes all day, that's up to you. But eventually, I think we've started evolving and trying to help people out. We get a lot of people writing in. We had a guy in recently who was coming out as gay to his GA club, and we had guests on to talk about that. So sometimes we do talk about serious issues, and it's been huge for us as people too. We've grown.
Yeah, we've definitely grown. I mean, we've evolved even in the 3 years since we started. It was like it was a lot of like laughs and quite laddish at the start, and then I think, like anything, you mature as a person, and that's reflected in the podcast. And I think we're that little bit of a sounding board for, you know, people who feel like they're not heard that much. So I think we try and incorporate that, and we try and talk about serious things because they are important.
Johnny McMahon and Johnny O'Brien, the two Johnnies from the Marty Morrissey Show. And unlike family, Brenda was talking to hairdresser Denise.
Good morning, Michelle. Did you put a box colour in during lockdown?
Denise, I had to put a box dye in. I'm telling you, I couldn't look at myself any longer, but you'll sort me out, I know you will.
It's back to business for Denise.
She runs Pilo Hairdressing Salon in Newbridge. And right now, she's just glad to be back to work.
I will never take for granted that Saturday evening of feeling absolutely shattered. I'm looking forward to going home this Saturday and saying I'm exhausted. So good to be back with the team. Like, I mean, anyone who hairdresses will know how much of a buzz it gives you to walk onto that salon floor. It's not just a job, it's a passion. We become like family. You know, you watch each other having babies, pregnancy, shine and work, and it's really hard being apart from them people for so long. Let's go upstairs for coffee. I'll fill you in and everything because these feet are starting to get sore.
Away from the noise of the hairdryers, Denise tells me that herself and her husband Mark are expecting their second baby. Thanks to rounds of IVF, they already have a beautiful six-year-old daughter, Beth. But this pregnancy just happened, and that was a most welcome surprise.
I actually still can't believe it. The pandemic for me did change my life. I actually sat back and lived my life. I learned to just go with the flow and enjoy what I had right in front of me.
What happened to you in terms of your fertility experience?
So March, I had my protocol in my hand and the clinic...
What's that?
So your medication. So the clinic said, look, let's hold back. Let's hold back on your cycle. And I was okay with that. I was out of my control. And when you're doing IVF, you learn that everything is out of your control. The summer hit and I actually think that I changed as a person. I spent all of my time with my daughter being so present that I became so happy with what I had. I was always like searching for the new business, like opening up new salons. I was searching for baby number two. I was constantly at my husband's for probably no reason. I was actually still fighting my fertility battle. I was still lonely. I was still the person that was failing in rounds of IVF, when in actual fact, I wasn't that person. I began reading, used to go out walking with Beth 3 times a day, nothing else to do. Sat on the floor with my daughter for hours, whereas before that I worked 60 hours a week. I became so in love with my life that I actually didn't want anything to change. When the first lockdown had lifted, and I said, you know what, Mark, I actually am okay with what we've got now. So I said, let's get the salons back open and then we'll reassess. We'll enjoy our Christmas and all that kind of jazz. And he was like, yeah. So I was obviously pregnant, like the October, but I didn't know.
Can you take me, Denise, to the moment where you're in the Coombe Hospital, you're being scanned and it's becoming official? What happened? Can you remember?
Do you? Yeah, I was obviously there on my own because Mark wasn't allowed in and my breath was held because I didn't know if this baby was okay. I could feel the tears building up as the midwife was saying, like, spine is perfect and the circumference of the brain. And then I just completely broke down. It's like, I couldn't hold it back anymore. I couldn't be more grateful for this opportunity. The gift of being pregnant, not once, but twice. I'm in awe.
Denise, I bet your coffee break is nearly over. That poor girl's hair will be blue. We go down and check her hair?
Yeah.
Denise from Like Family with Brenda Donoghue. And that's it for Playback Daily. So mind yourself till next time.